to the Radio Life Sciences Podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the new episode of the Radio Life Sciences. My name is Anastasia Kuroshova. I'm a postdoctoral researcher at the Center of Education and Training of the UMC Utrecht. And today I'm happy to welcome in our studio Farah Coles, a PhD student at the same center and a colleague of mine. Farah, could you please introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, everyone. So as Nastia said, my name is Farah Coles, and I work at the Department of Biomedical Sciences in the Center for Education and Training of the UMC Utrecht. There, I do my PhD research on translational medicine.
Translational medicine, that's a topic about which we recently talked with Natalie Bradenburg, because she just started her project on the same topic by actually building on your research. And I'm very glad that you agreed to talk to us today, because then we can go really in depth and learn about the project which you are already finishing. And let's share great news, which is
I got my approval today that my dissertation was approved by the committee. So I will defend it in April.
That's fantastic news. And since I congratulations, I'm so happy for you. So today I would like to talk about your PhD dissertation more in detail. But before that, let's tell a bit about your educational background to our listeners.
Yeah, sure. So I'm from Utrecht, and I did my bachelor's here at the UU, Bachelor of Biomedical Science, and my master's at the GSLS. And when I did my program, it was still called Biology of Disease.
Mm-hmm. And now let's delve to translational medicine. How did you come up to this topic? What was your journey? What did motivate you to work on this quite fascinating but also unusual topic, I would say?
Definitely unusual, coming from a background of biomedical sciences and a lab background myself. So how I would say it started is that during my master's, I did the research profile. So I believe it's still the same, that you can do an internship at the UMC, and then you can do a second internship. And for my second internship, I decided to go abroad to the US, to the Boston area. And I found an internship at Harvard Medical School, where I spent more than 8 months in a lab doing fascinating research. And because I had done a little bachelor internship and then a previous master's, I had quite some lab experience, and I was interested in helping the scientists in the lab, because I saw that a lot of scientists were experiencing a lot of publication pressure, especially in the high competitive environment in the US where I was. And so it's got me thinking about actually helping these scientists with my PhD research.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested, what exactly did you see there? So first of all, of course, you worked very hard yourself. We all heard at least about the American culture in the labs. And I'm also interested, could you provide an example of your colleagues? How does their working day usually look like? You know, how your working day looked like there?
Well, I can only speak to, of course, the lab where I was in. It was quite an international place. So the center where I was had a research group from Japan and from China and from Italy. And there were Americans there too. But I actually saw quite the same across all groups. It was just a very hardworking environment. The work-life balance wasn't really there. I myself worked till like from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. each working day. And in the weekends, I would have to go back to the lab because we had a big mouse study. So I had to take care of the mice and give treatment. And so I worked a lot of hours, and it definitely impacted my health also.
I can imagine.
Wow. Yeah, because in labs, you're not allowed to eat or drink. And if you're working on a big experiment, sometimes you forget to take a break. And suddenly you look up and it's dark outside. So, I mean, this is a little bit of an extreme example, but I believe that a lot of biomedical researchers feel this this hard pressure.
And working that hard led you to actually a few publications, if I'm correct?
Yes. So, which was funny because that is something as a student that you really strive for and you think, wow, if I get a publication, that would really be...
During your master's.
Really be good for my CV, right? And I got them and it was great, obviously, but I was working in a center that was quite patient-focused, but I never saw a patient myself and I was quite interested in, okay, so now we have this publication. What are we actually doing with it to help patients? Because as you know, and as Natalie probably explained, translational medicine is all about clinical relevance. And so I was starting to have trouble with the strive for publications and that pressure, and it really being having quite some negative effects sometimes, and not seeing the patient reward or not seeing clearly how we would take it further to make it relevant for patients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so to summarize, you've worked so hard, you actually achieved amazing results, but actually at a high price in terms of work-life balance. And then also didn't see many patients, or actually didn't see them at all. And you came up with this desire to learn about this topic more.
Yes, it's complicated because on the one hand, a little competition and a little pressure is not a bad thing, but it is if it has or starts having negative side effects. And especially in translational science, I started really feeling this conflict between trying to get publications and saying that you're trying to help patients. I couldn't see how the two fit together. And so it really started rolling around in my brain, and I really wanted to do a PhD project after my master's. I didn't know in what, and I knew that if I would stay there and continue working, mm-hmm. I don't know if I would have survived the pressure myself.
Mm-hmm. And you chose to?
And yeah, so this was a difficult time because you're about to graduate and you don't have a job lined up, and it's right. A really scary time. And what I did is I reached out to some of my previous teachers from the bachelor's and the master's and had conversations with them, told them what I was thinking. And actually, on their advice, I decided to take this big leap of faith and start a PhD project that is more in the social sciences and not in a lab and not using any methods or the research that I was accustomed to. Mm-hmm. So having to learn all these new methods.
Did your teachers recognize the issues which you described to them?
Actually, every single one that I talked to from biomedical did, yes.
Oh, that's very, very interesting that it is still feels so familiar to them, even though we need to know that the work-life balance here is so much better compared to the US, isn't it?
I think it is one of the better places, yes.
So they were very supportive towards your idea, and they said, yes, we need to do research on that, we will support you. And how did it develop from that point?
After having these conversations, the one that stuck out the most and who became my promoter is Harald Vareje, who, as everyone knows, is the director of the graduate school. He introduced me to my other promoter, Berend Bracke, who runs the Center for Education and Training. And incidentally, both of them are very interested in this topic and also from an educational standpoint and a more of a supportive standpoint. Both of them are biomedical or medically trained and also recognized all the things that I was saying. And so we put together a plan and four chapters for my thesis, basically.
So let's get to your thesis then. Could you introduce to us the title of it and tell about the overarching aim?
So the title is Navigating Translational Medicine in Academia. How can translational scientists be rewarded and supported in their careers? And to look into this, we decided on four perspectives, let's say. So each chapter looks at this from a different side. One looks at publication pressure. in the biomedical field. The second is an interview study talking to translational scientists themselves and asking them how they deal with the publication pressure versus working towards their translational goals. The third is mentorship for translational scientists. And the fourth is an educational take on it, where I explain a little bit later more about it, but it's it looks more into the competencies of translational scientists.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the overview. I would be very curious to go through some concepts or some findings that you had. So one of the chapters is dedicated to creating societal impact in contrast to publicational impact or publicational pressure. Could you provide us examples of how a translational scientist could do societal impact? How can they approach it?
Yeah. So one of the findings, mainly from the interview study, I have to say, is I interviewed translational scientists from all kinds of different countries, different career stages, different specialties, as different as possible. And interestingly, they all said basically the same things and gave suggestions for what a more ideal world would look like for them. And after analyzing the results, I came to three tiers, let's say, of their advice. One was on the self level, then one up a more institutional level, and then a third a global level. So let's start with the self level. This is kind of how you position yourself in the research pipeline, the lab you choose to work in, what kind of work-life balance they have, what kind of outreach they do, and what you do for yourself, what kind of mentors you look for career advice. Those are more like examples of self. On an institutional level, all of these people that are interviewed, they have different working domains. Some were MDs, some were MD-PhDs, some were PhDs, and so they had different responsibilities in the clinical, educational, and research domain. And what they said would help on an institutional level is if these three domains would talk to each other more, mm-hmm. and help facilitate spending time in these three domains, because classically there's not enough hours in the day. And so a lot of time, I feel they said, was lost trying to switch between a clinical day and a research day and an educational day, and that could be facilitated more. And the third level, the global level, was of course very interesting and talked about a cultural shift globally in the research world, away from publication counting and more the quantitative measures, more towards qualitative measures. For instance, what a researcher does for education, for policy, for health innovations. Do they collaborate with industry? Do they have patents pending? So basically all the steps that you could take after a publication.
Did you encounter someone who combines those roles very successfully?
So interestingly, one of the questions that I asked them is, how would you divide your time ideally? And every single person's answer was different. Some would say 80% research, 20% clinical, 50% clinical, 50% research, and education is in there always. So even though some of the people I interviewed were professors and really established in their careers, everyone was still struggling, and everyone said there is no perfect answer. And as soon as we accept that you can't quantify this, what a person does for scientific impact, you can't catch everything in quantitative measures. As soon as we accept this and also include qualitative measures, then they feel this would really help the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting.
And maybe to add one point, an outcome of the review I did on publication pressure in literature is that hiring criteria should be as transparent as possible and not only focus on publication records. I know, or I hope, that they don't focus solely on this. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are grants now that also ask for other types of scientific impact. But it should be as transparent as possible because science is such an international thing that if one researcher wants to move to a different country, a different institute, that it should be clear, you know, what someone is judged on. And that was one of the main findings there.
Exactly. In that country, it should be recognized and valued the same criteria which were used in the other one. I think one of your studies actually was focused on Eureka Institute, or you collaborated with them, isn't it? Could you tell us a bit about that institute? Because it's very much aligns with what we're talking about now.
Yes. So that takes me back to the start of my PhD project. Behrens, one of my promoters, he is one of the founders of the Eureka Institute, and they host a yearly summer school in Utrecht, which you can follow if you're a late master student or a PhD or early postdoc. Everyone is welcome. Basically, it's a summer school about translational medicine, about the issues of the field, and really about forming a community to help each other navigate this this complex field. So what Eureka was actually set up to do is to create a community, an environment to address unmet medical needs. I believe one of their mission statements is to foster a global community of translational medicine professionals that support each other, but also work towards societal needs. And they organize many different educational courses. And as I said, one of them is right here in Utrecht.
And you were part of that community. You are still part of that community. Could you tell us how it feels to be at that summer school or to communicate with them? Because I can imagine that these are very inspirational people if they manage to balance different aspects.
Yeah, you're right. That week felt really great, not only with my fellow students, the participants who I really felt a connection with, but also the faculty that came and spoke to us about their own experiences. And the faculty was very diverse. They work in all kinds of different countries, in different positions, some in industry, some in academia. And basically, they all came together to teach us a little bit about the process. For instance, we also had lessons in entrepreneurship and in intellectual property, patents, but also more of the lab side, golden standards in lab testing, things we may or may not should move away from. Reducing research waste is a big topic there, because I believe there are a few studies showing that much of the biomedical research that is done is never actually impactful in the end. Now, you can't always know that when you start a project, obviously, but you can take more precautions to make sure something is translatable into humans. And what we also ended up doing is designing a mentorship program for the students of the summer school. So that is actually what you were asking me about. That is one of my other studies, is after we designed this mentorship program, because we wanted to give these students something to support them when they went back home. And one of the findings is that what mentors and mentees craved the most, their mentorship needs, was to learn more about mentorship to begin with, because they hadn't experienced any education towards being a good mentee or being a good mentor, to gain or give career support. So from the mentees, they are very much struggling with their next career choices and next steps and wanted to talk to someone. And for the mentors, who maybe didn't have someone themselves, they really wanted to give that advice. And the third finding is to gain a network, which is exactly what the Eureka Institute was set up to do. So they really honed in on one of the needs.
I would like to move to the another highlight from your dissertation, and that was about challenge-based learning. And it was that study was done within the context of one of the GSLS profiles. So please tell us about it more.
So interesting how that came about is during COVID, a lot of the research internships and the lab positions for our students were limited, of course. And the GSLS had to pivot and figure out how to provide our students with profiles that would still fit within the biomedical master's education. And one of those initiatives was the Translational Life Sciences profile, the TLS profile. And I was lucky enough to be in the team that developed and ran this profile for the first 2 years. And so we really had to think how to fill in this six-month profile. And we chose a challenge-based approach following a double diamond model that gave our students the opportunity to work on a high-risk, high-reward project from a client that is within the life sciences but can be anything you can think of. Could, for instance, we had projects from departments within the UMC or the Wilhelmina Children's Hospital, so quite medically focused, but we also have had projects from industry or from institutes like TNO. So giving our students a project for 6 months to work on coming up with a solution to a problem.
And could you provide us a couple of examples of those problems, issues with which they worked? Would be very interesting for our listeners.
Yes. Just out of the first year of the profile, which I was a part of, for instance, we had a project from pediatric rheumatology, where there was a very small patient population that was having severe side effects to a certain drug. And the students were asked how if they could look into this, the mechanisms of this drug and how they could possibly mitigate these side effects. So it was quite a biomedical classical lab-based project. But on the other hand, from TNO, there was a project about the relation between agricultural pesticide use and Parkinson's disease. So all biomedical, but all from different examples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much. Could you please summarize the findings of your dissertation? If it would be one tip, what could it be?
The main message is that translational medicine is complex, and we still don't know the correct answers of how to navigate it successfully. Publication pressure is complicated. There's not one right answer of how to measure someone's scientific impact, and this is still an open conversation that we need to be having.
Farah, thank you so much for joining us today at the Radio Life Sciences. I would like to thank our listeners for being here with us today, and stay tuned to the new episodes. Bye.
Thank you. Life Sciences Radio.